and welcome to the DMV podcast, brought to you by DMV, the podcast booking platform. Whether you're a podcaster or an aspiring guest, the DMV app is the perfect platform for you to get booked and manage your podcast bookings. I'm your host, Sukair, the founder of DMV, and on this podcast, we'll be discussing the latest news and views in tech, the ins and outs of entrepreneurship, and even dipping our toes into the adrenaline-filled world of mixed martial arts. On this week's episode, I speak with Sadi Fawad. Sadi is a business advisor and financial planner. We speak about her early career working as an analyst for some of the largest financial institutions in the Middle East. We speak about some of the challenges of being a woman in a male-dominated environment and how to eventually gain their respect. We also discuss career breaks, motherhood, to eventually going independent. If you're a new or established business owner, you could definitely benefit from Sadi's insights. And if you need help with your own modelling, Sadi's contact info is available in the show notes. So please enjoy Sadi Fawad. Sadi Fawad, welcome to the DME podcast. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so I wanted to invite you on because obviously we've worked together on DME and I valued your experience when it came to business modelling and planning. So I thought others could benefit as well, especially in the tech space. So do you want to give us a little bit of a background into your career and how you started and how you ended up where you are today, helping businesses with their financial modelling?
Sure, I would love to. So I started off my career right after doing my undergrad in banking and finance. Mm-hmm. I kicked off with as an investment analyst in a development financial institution, which are sort of like sovereign fund arms for two governments. So the one I worked with was Pakistan Kuwait Investment Companies.
Oh, okay.
So I started off there as an investment analyst, but I was young. I was hot blooded. So pretty soon I realized being an analyst was too slow for work for me,
right.
And I got an opportunity and switched over to trading and advisory roles, corporate advisory roles. My role included doing corporate advisory for foreign exchange, and as my career progressed, it included products like debt instruments, and it included products like hedging corporates, large institutions against their FX or foreign exchange exposures. That lasted about 12 odd years, and then I decided to take a break from my family.
Yeah. So where was this? Was this your career in the Middle East or in Pakistan? Or
yeah, so I started off in Pakistan, but primarily my experience has been with European institutions like Barclays and Deutsche Bank.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
So you must have been handling quite large sums of money out for people.
That's true, and very, very known and, you know, household names of clients like Unilever and P&G and Coca-Cola.
Okay.
So those sort of clients have really large needs, regardless of wherever they are placed in the world. Even in smaller countries like Pakistan, they still would have really large FX exposures because of the amount of exports and imports that they need to do and the payments that they need to make, or overnight fund placements that they have, which can, you know, range to from a few hundred millions to a billion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of zeros.
Yes, exactly.
How did you find it there? Because I think the stereotypical viewpoint of Middle Eastern countries and financing, that is quite a male-dominated industry. Obviously, you're a young female in that industry. How did you find that?
Right. So I was 21 when I started off, you know, right after I finished my undergrad. In fact, I was just still in my last semester when I started off my first job. And you're right that for the first few months, at least, at my workplace, there were skepticism about how a girl so young would fit in an environment that is so highly dominated by male peers.
Yeah.
But once my reputation was cemented in the space, I think that it took me places. Because once my colleagues and my seniors, they knew or realized or recognized, rather, that I have the capabilities, being a woman didn't really hold me back. In fact, it propelled me forward, thanks to all the diversity and inclusion campaigns.
So it actually helped you then?
It did. It did.
But did you feel like you had to kind of work harder just to kind of gain that recognition of a male colleague with a similar age and similar experience?
That's true. That's true. Because the common notion is that a woman cannot put two and two together. She's not really good at mathematics. And the field of finance that I was in, you're required to do a lot of mathematics and a lot of number crunching. You need to have it on your fingertips.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, once my peers were comfortable that I have the skill set or the knowledge base that is required to be in a role, they preferred having me, because then, as I mentioned, I was in an advisory role for corporates.
Yeah.
And you would see that, I mean, you have children, right?
Yes.
And you know that a five-year-old girl is much more socially intelligent than a five-year-old boy.
In my children's case, that's definitely.
All right. Well, that's not usually the case, right? So a 21-year-old girl is very emotionally intelligent or socially intelligent than a 21-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Right? And that put me in a very favorable position when I was working with clients. It made me help pick up on cues or made me more flexible to deal with difficult clients. And that really added, that extra edge.
Yes, I think there's common helm, like psychological studies that do say that the male brain doesn't mature or isn't fully grown until he's 25 or 26. That probably weighs out. So they're a bit of free research for all the CEOs, all the big companies, hire young women. So you said you took a break for your family.
Mm-hmm.
And did you go back into the big banking world, or just kind of you took a different route?
Right. So as life would have it, when I took my career break, my son was born. And then when he was about 2.5, we relocated. And when I settled into my new relocation, COVID struck.
Right.
So it's the one thing after the other kept happening that delayed my coming back to a full-time banking job. Also, as much as I loved my job, my husband also has a city job, by the way.
Right.
I knew that my family could not afford to have two people working in a high-pressure job.
Sure.
And my children didn't choose to be born. I always say this. My children didn't choose to be born. I chose to have them. So it's my responsibility to be the parent that I need to be for them. I knew that, despite COVID striking or whatever, that this is probably not the way for me.
Sure.
Going forward. But I didn't know really what to do or how to go about it. And not to mention that towards the end of COVID, I had my second born. So again, I knew that the day I found out that I'm expecting another child, I knew that it's going to be another 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
That my career cannot go the traditional route.
Yeah, well, you've seen a lot of young professional women who kind of focus on their career in their 20s, and then should they fear taking a break and starting a family if that's what they wish to do?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because your children, like I said, they didn't choose to be born. Mm-hmm. One. Secondly, it's very fleeting. They grow up so quickly. And I know it's as cliched as it sounds, but my older one is 8 now. Mm-hmm. And he and I had a very deep connection when, he was a little younger, under 5 especially. But as he's growing now, especially at the age of 7, 8, he's more interested in football. And his role model is his dad. So he's drifting away from me. And I'm so glad that I did not do anything else for the first 5 years of his life. And I just focused on building our connection. Because pretty soon it's going to be his friends that he'd want to hang out with, and then it's going to be a partner, then work and whatnot. So, and then his own family to focus on. So probably I just had that first 5 years with him one-on-one, and I'm not getting it back. So, please, by all means. And I think in how COVID has just reshaped the world, with digital nomad opportunities, remote working opportunities, an exponential boom in entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
There are so many things that you could do. So many things you could do. You don't really have to be slave to a desktop.
Certainly not. So is that what kind of inspired you to go, right, I can apply my skills in
I I honestly did not know that I had the skill set, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. So I discovered the skill set by accident. And I'll tell you the story. So during COVID, because we all had so much time on our hand and we were reconnecting with our friends a whole lot more. So I have a friend here in London, and she and I, we had been, talking and bouncing off ideas each other. She's also a stay-at-home mom. She used to be then. And we kept thinking that, this is a problem. We were not necessarily talking about business ideas, mm-hmm. but just generally cribbing about problems in general that we face. And one of the problems that we do face is finding modest clothing that is also modern.
Okay.
So I don't want to be going out looking like covered head to toe in a modest clothing and, sending out a certain statement, mm-hmm. but I still want to be modestly dressed.
Sure.
Right? So we thought that, there's no such thing. So whatever you find is on extreme ends of the spectrum. So perhaps we could do something. And because we had connections in Pakistan, and it's one of the largest textile exporters in the world, we thought we'd had access to good vendors and suppliers. She's more of a creative person. So she focused on, finding a vendor, creating designs and all of that. And mm-hmm. I focused on the financial modeling and business planning part.
Right.
So it just started off with a simple spreadsheet and doing calculations and, sorting the numbers out and making a plan that what our growth is going to be like, who's going to be our vendor, who's going to be our customer, how we're going to go into e-commerce or retail, finding that mix and, putting that all down. Unfortunately, somewhere along the way, the plan fizzled out because of, number of reasons that happened on both of our parts. But I discovered the skill set.
Yeah.
I discovered that what I knew from my experience as an institutional stakeholder, I could very well apply that to smaller businesses.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be Coca-Cola's or Unilever's or P&G's of the world who abide by those principles. Same thing could apply to smaller businesses. So I started studying it up more on it, started brushing up my skills. I did the corporate finance institutions, financial modeling and valuation course to brush up on skills. Because again, when I worked and when I was an investment analyst, most of the businesses were really large scale businesses. So, like a cement manufacturing plant or a soft drink manufacturing plant massive businesses that have physical presence and capital expenditure. But smaller businesses are tech extensive. So they don't really have assets, but they still have very large P&L. And their growth trajectories are very different to what traditional businesses' growth trajectory or a brick and mortar business growth trajectory could be like.
Yeah.
So that was an entirely different area to study and, figure out on its own, which I did. And I'm glad I did because I think in the last 2 years, I've come a pretty long way.
So what was it like when your first customer gave you your first inquiry and your first bit of business?
Oh, I was ecstatic. It was a very thrilling experience. That was a very pleasant feeling, actually, that somebody, and of course, they finalized me after having a first conversation with me. And I was pretty amazed that, I had, I believed myself. I thought I had a skill set, but somebody else also believes that I can do it. And then to service them, I went over and beyond to, make them really happy with what they have. And they were really getting a bang for their buck.
So what kind of problems did the businesses or clients come to you with that you feel help them solve?
Right. So I think I help businesses on different levels, mm-hmm. but some of the problems that they come to me, for example, the first time they would need a financial planner or financial analyst is if they are on ideation stage, mm-hmm. and they are thinking of a product, but they don't know what to charge for that product.
Yeah.
Right? So coming up with a price point. So that's like very first requirement for a financial strategist that you could identify or you could have. a lot of people just, you know, when they are pricing a product, they just price it on a whim. Yeah. Well, I think this is the right price. Right. All right, good for you. but that's not always the case. It's pricing is a science.
Right.
Secondly, people would come to me or people could require somebody with my expertise is if they want to see, does this business make financial sense? Mm-hmm. Is this business financially viable? Is it sustainable? So that's one stage. But unfortunately, in the first two stages, founders or entrepreneurs tend to bypass somebody with my expertise.
Yeah.
And they say that, oh, well, we can take care of it. And we can just do it on a piece of paper. And they only think of an analyst or a planner when they are looking for funding.
Yeah.
And then they really have to
yes.
have a financial model in place and they really have to do it. So that's where they usually come to me.
Yeah, it sounded like my case perfectly at the time I approached you. That's great. So do you also help other than the financial modeling?
Yes.
Also help in other areas of the business?
Yes, I do. I do. So I do help businesses with, creating a financial plan. So we sit down, we have conversations back and forth, and then we come up with a financial model where we see if the business is financially viable or not, or what could be tweaked to make it more lucrative for you. Second is giving you the confidence, giving my client the confidence in what we've created in terms of number. So it's when somebody works with me on a financial model, I don't just give them the spreadsheet and let them walk away with it. Mm-hmm. They're more than welcome to, sit with me, talk to me for hours and hours and just be 100% confident in the numbers that we've created.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole purpose of exercise. You being comfortable with the numbers that we have put together. Because it's those numbers... Everybody's not a numbers person, no. I kind of took it for granted, to be honest. When mm-hmm. when I started off with my consulting journey, I thought that, why would anybody need somebody with this? I mean, this is an Excel spreadsheet. This is how you put it together. And this is how you get the output. But everybody has different skill set, right? So somebody is... like you, is more strong in tech, which I have absolutely no idea about. And, so that's how I add compliments to teams of the businesses that I work with.
Yeah. So have you ever tell any of your clients some news that they wouldn't necessarily want to hear? And how do you kind of deliver that message?
Yes, a lot of times. A lot of times, yes. Anybody or who comes up with an idea, they think that, oh my God, this idea is so brilliant and, I'm going to change the world with this idea. But when you actually dig down the numbers, mm-hmm. So one of the most important numbers that we are digging down is figuring out what the market is like, the market sizing. And a lot of time people just overestimate the market size, or if they don't overestimate the market size, they overestimate how much they're going to capture of that market.
Yeah.
It's not always that easy that there's a problem, you have a solution, and you're going to capture the market. You have to take the solution to the market, which costs you.
Yeah.
Right? So, so sometimes it does happen, and I have to be tactful.
Yeah.
And I let spreadsheet do the work. I said, this is what the numbers say. I'm not saying anything. You can play with the numbers. And you can maybe, see if you could work on the customer side. You can maybe do work on the marketing side and see if you could get different outcomes.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most valuable insights that you kind of gave me. Some of the assumptions I was making, you kind of went back, right, actually put some science behind those assumptions, please, and base it on something. So I was like, okay, and I wasn't quite sure. So it was an assumption on top of an assumption on top of an assumption.
Yes. Yes.
It's a nice round number with those zeros at the end that I wanted. Then kind of your help kind of focused me a little bit. Okay, so I've got to put some science around this. So you've got to go back to the drawing board, okay, back to the basics. Okay, let's make sure this is based in reality a little bit. So I think the service that you provide is when you are standing in with a an owner looking for funding is sort of standing in front of potential investors and give them that sound foundation and something concrete for which to back up the numbers. Because I think what I've seen and learned so far is the investors love to scrutinize the numbers and look for any kind of chink in the armor that can kind of drive down the value and make it a better deal for them.
That is 100% correct. And I think as when we are putting together numbers, founders, they tend to focus on the bottom line. Like, oh, look, my P&L is looking so great.
Yeah.
But that's not what an investor is going to look at. They're not going to go like top down. They're going to go bottom up. So they're going to say, okay, you came up with this revenue number or this P&L, but what are the underlying assumptions? What is driving that revenue? How are you getting those customers?
Yeah.
And that can be tricky. Most people, they falter when it comes to identifying how they're acquiring the customers.
Yeah.
And most financial modelers, they also overlook that part. So they base their entire financial modeling on what the founder is anticipating. So obviously, a founder who has built a business, he's got a very optimistic stance. And I'm not arguing that a business person shouldn't be optimistic about what they're creating. But my job as a planner and a modeler is to include realistic bias in those assumptions or in those hopes that a founder has in their business. And if I think that there is something that I could, if some sort of insight that I could give them to arrive at those numbers, then that's my win. That's all I need to have. So for me, it's not very crucial that my founder secures an investment or not. Of course, if that's the purpose they come to me for, 100%, I'm going to get them ready for that. But I think the most important thing when you are setting up a business is that it should be sustainable for you.
Yeah.
You should make the business investable so that it's a no-brainer for anybody to put an investment or put a check in front of you. And at the end of the day, obviously, you're spending your time, your energy, you're bootstrapping your business. Most of the time, founders are bootstrapping their business. So it has to make sense for you. First of all, before any other investor.
And bootstrapping, we mean founders are investing, putting their own money into it.
Right? Yes, founders who are putting their own blood, sweat, tears, their bank balances, their life savings into their business. 100%. That's the term bootstrapping. That's what it means.
Yeah, so it's got startup jargon, isn't it? Okay, so for kind of aspiring entrepreneurs, what's kind of the one bit of advice that you can give them, either before coming to you or after coming to you when they're starting their aspiring businesses?
I would say that discuss your business with people with different skill sets or surround yourself with advisors or mentors. So people are really easily accessible now through LinkedIn or other social media like Instagram as well. In areas of marketing, in areas of social media management, because that's what's going to help you reach your ideal customer. Most of these businesses are people like me who are present on LinkedIn. So most of us, most of the service providers would be happy to give you, a few free consultations to discuss what your problems are or what your idea is or, help you through it and take on all of that free advice. You don't have to pay someone to start getting advice. Don't be afraid to have conversations. Mm-hmm. Talk to people. Talk about your business. Discuss your business. Schedule those calls and jump on those calls and have those discussions.
Awesome. And if someone wanted to get in touch with you and procure your services, how would they do that?
Like I said, find me on LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn with my name, Sadia.R.F.
Awesome. Well, we'll link to your profile in the episode description. And Sadia, thank you for coming on the DME podcast.
It was my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.